Incoming pitch. Spin rate of 2,500 RPM, 95.6 miles per hour.
Adjusting swing, 12 degrees. Proceed with launch angle.
Welcome back to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. I'm Rob D, Deadpool Hitter. You can always catch me on X at Deadpool Hitter. Jeff Zimmerman, Rob Silver, they'll be coming on very shortly. You can also catch them on the X machine at Jeff W. Zimmerman and at Rob Silver. Today we have an episode where we dive into Jeff's recent Mind in the News article. We talk about his recent rankings release on Fangraphs, and then we get into some recent transactions such as Teoscar Hernandez, Shoto Imanaga, Marcus Stroman, Jordan Hicks, and Michael Bush. And then we continue our ADP preview, and we run down a couple of players on this episode, mostly Red Sox, but we hit up Masataka Yoshida, Jaron Duran, Nick Pivetta, and Vinny Pascantino. Just a reminder, at every other episode of the Launch Angle Podcast is available on the Pull Hitter Patreon. You come and be a part of the Pull Hitter family, the Meatball Mafia. You will surely not be let down. I am providing player breakdown content. I've done about 20 player breakdowns so far. I've broken down about 10 of my drafts. Gladiators, draft champions from front to back. We have different tiers for you to get involved with. You can join and just get the extra Launch Angles if you want for $5 a month. I'm currently running an offer for an annual deal. You can get 2 months off, so you can hurry up and go sign there now. I'll be running that deal for another 2 weeks, and get access to the Discord too if you join any tier above that. And the Discord is just one of the most invaluable tools right now and places to be for fantasy baseball. We have threads on several different topics, and you'll find it very useful for your fantasy baseball prep. There's more information in these threads than there are on current websites, and come check it out. Free trial offer too for a week for the $10 tier. You can get an all-access pass for $20 a month, and it'll give you access to everything that I currently do. And then in season, access to my ADP articles, my starting pitcher preview every week with Mr. Matt Modica, as well as daily podcast covering actionable events from the day before. Tons of stuff. I do about 9 podcasts a week, 10 including the Fab, and 11 including the Matt Modica starting pitcher pod. During the season, you can get all that all access pass. And for right now, 2 months off if you join for an annual deal. But come check it out. Plenty of healthy things and healthy discussions going on that I'm sure you it'll be very useful for you, and you would enjoy being part of the community, the Meatball Mafia community. And Rob and Jeff are very active in it as well. Get a lot of good discussions going on in there. So hope to see you in there shortly. If not, if you could leave a rating and review for me, Jeff, and Rob on the show, that would be very helpful. Goes a long way in our fantasy content provider world. And what else is new? The NFBC has a new contest out there. It's called the NFBC Champions League. I hope everyone has a chance to go check it out. It's a contest where you get to test your mettle in 3 different formats: the NFBC Online Championship, the Main Event, and Draft Champions. So you get a 50-round draft and hold 15 teams. You get a 15-team Fab League and a 12-team Fab League. And what it is everyone is going to be lumped into one overall, and the overall standings will be conducted between those members only. So however many people sign up, right now we have over 70. We're hoping to get as many as we can. And there's still the 10 different categories for 3 formats, so 30 categories technically. And it'll be a full overall standings between your overall standard on all 30 categories. And the top 15 players from this season will enter the Champions League in 2025. And it's going to be a highlighted Champions League. I'm going to be podcasting about it this year with Mr. Randy Haynes. We're going to be just looking at the standings week by week, seeing, and as we get closer to the end of the season, and seeing who's going to be playing in this Champions League. And that Champions League in 2025 will be a 15-team auction league, and it'll be live in Las Vegas under the NFBC title. So it's going to be really cool. It's a very different idea and theory behind it, but testing your mettle and different. See the who's the most well-rounded player so far. We have 2 people who have signed up who have never even played NFBC before. So if that's you and this sounds interesting to you, come check it out. Mr. Toby Backflip Crazy, it was his idea. The NFBC was kind enough to put it into effect. And right now, like I said, we have over 70 contestants who have signed up, which makes the pot around $19,000 for that Champions League in 2025. First place is going to be a little bit over 11,000 right now. So come check it out. If you have any questions on how to sign up for it, let me know. You can DM me on Twitter at Deadpool Hitter. You can email the show at launchanglepodcast@gmail.com. Anyway, you can get in touch with me. All the ways of contact are available in the show notes as well. So you could just click it. It'll take you right to where you have to get in touch with us. I would love to see everyone sign up for this. It's going to be a very fantastic contact. So with that being said, we're going to bring in Jeff and Rob. We're going to get right into the show. Thank you for everyone for listening to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast.
Here's the pitch.
Yes, I got it. Welcome back to the Launch Angle Podcast. I'm Rob D, Deadpool Hitter. I'm here with Jeff Zimmerman, Rob Silver. How you guys doing on this wonderful Friday, January 12th?
Dealing with Silver's weather, Canada cold crap. Just a certain level of cold, just everything just starts breaking. I'm just like hoping my pipes just don't freeze and break.
Are you going to watch the Chiefs outside this weekend, Jeff? Are you
going to go? If I wanted to, minus 30.
Their tickets are going cheap now.
They are dirt cheap right now. I probably could have gotten some for free if I really wanted to, but hell no.
deeply unpleasant would be my reaction to going to sit outside for 3 hours to watch football.
I can go to a bar and drink beer and be warm and have a burger.
HDTV killed the want to go to live games,
especially football. Football live is so shitty. Anyways.
So Jeff, you've been busy. You've been pounding out Mine in the News was a nice lengthy one. You just got your rankings up there, top 200 bats, plugging away. The ranking just seems like a daunting task for you guys to put out over on FanGraphs.
It is. They draw a ton of views. Like, they pay the bills. There's nothing against. I mean, there's no way to look at it. Spores like pitcher rankings will probably outperform. It will probably be the highest viewed article at FanGraphs, even like the trade ones, because everyone just keeps coming back to it.
Yeah,
I see. It's one of those deals. It's like, well, these are the bill makers. Once you see it, it's like they need to be done. And the way we did it this year is pretty good, where they have it set easy for us to go back in and make changes. It took a lot of work on the back end, but the ADP will update. We'll actually change it to the OC here soon. Right now it's draft champions, and the auction calculator automatically changes now too. So that was kind of some of our issues, was like all this stuff wasn't changing. It was really hard to do, and they simplified it. And so at least for us, it's just, Jordan Hicks is now going to start or whatever. And Paul just has to go in and kind of figure out where he wants to put him, and everything else will update.
That's fantastic. It's good stuff.
I'm a bit shocked that the Justin Mason bathing suit photo article doesn't surpass the Spore pitching article, but you have access to the numbers. I don't, Jeff. So I'll take you at your face value.
I don't know the poor people are going back to that one, but I guess maybe there is.
It's honestly only Rob DiPietro pressing refresh like every night before bedtime. But this judgment-free zone, like, we're very accepting of whatever Rob does in the privacy of his own bedroom is none of our business.
Whatever
gets him through those cold nights.
Yeah,
you gotta do what you gotta do.
Cold nights in Jersey, whatever it is. I do like how you teared it out, Jeff, though, like in different, you know, you got your five category studs and, you know, like different tiers of what you might need, you know, and rank that way. I like that little balance it gives to the rankings. It's different.
Yeah. And we had talked about that and went over a bunch of them, and there was a little bit of coding issues we had, and it works good now because you can have a different player rank, but in a different tier, like the tier doesn't have to be in the exact order. So that works really great. Again, that was just so we can all automate it at the end, but or like doing the other numbers that come in. So we're happy with how it turns out, and
looks great.
We just have to just kind of keep updating. I think like I was the one that happened to update it there for a while with all the outfielders signing, and now Spores we're having to do a starting pitchers like twice a day.
Yeah, big work, a lot of work. Your Mind in the News article had a lot of nice nuggets.
Esther Ruiz is looking to add some power to his swing. How confident do you guys feel about that? Those words and Kevin Kiermaier, who says I can never sit still. I've got this fire in me. I feel, oh man, I've got this fire in me too. I'm hitting for power this year. Nice quotes though. I don't know. Esther Ruiz had a nice September. I don't know if they did something maybe in September that they kind of maybe they implemented started it last year and they continue this year, but I don't know. I'm still not believing that until we see it. I'm staying far away from him. He just went 120 in my new DC that I started, and it's someone's first outfielder. So God bless. What do you guys think about the Garrett Crochet being stretched out into a starter? I mean, he's never really pitched as a starter in pro ball. Everyone's, you know, speculating him on in draft champions as a possible save source. Jeff, what do you think about this?
I think he's going to be like a 2 or 3 inning guy. I think that that's where he kind of belongs. And I think that that'll on the White Sox, I think that'll work good for them. Like they might have some guys that can't go that long and he'll come in and keep them close in a game if they need to, and then get out of it. I think there's gonna be a lot more of these guys kind of popping up around the game where every 4 days they throw 2 innings and that's what he does. So I think that's where he ends up. Maybe he's going to try to start, but I don't see it actually happening. I just see him being a long reliever and being a good one.
Yeah. And what's interesting to me, and this is where you need to both evaluate the player and actually deep dive into these players. We're going to talk, I assume, about the Hicks signing in a second. And then you also need to, and this is really hard to do, because if you just get Steamer or the bat or Zips or whatever, and don't start understanding what's under the hood in terms of a starter projection versus a reliever projection, you can get from a math perspective, forget the kind of more subjective evaluation, into a lot of trouble. The penalty for pitchers going from the bullpen to the rotation are very real. On the other hand, like it's complicated because guys who are just doing what Jeff said and going out for 2 innings, how much or 3 innings, how much different is that from being a reliever? It's not the same. We know it's not the same, but it's also not like a guy who's only been able to go for 1 inning suddenly going 6 or 7 innings in terms of what the penalty is going to look like. But for example, Mason Miller on Oakland, if you assume he doesn't get a single save, but makes it through the season and gives you 80 or 90 innings, could be an incredible pitcher in terms of helping your ratios. There's a big proviso, can stay healthy for 80 or 90 innings. I'm not opining on that, but these guys can be in 15 team mixed leagues, really viable pitchers. So I'm not saying this is going to work for him, but I'm saying, like, don't rule him out as a potential valuable guy, even if Jeff is right and he never becomes a 150 inning starting pitcher.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know how to feel about him and valuing him for a draft right now. I feel like I need to see him first and then just kind of make it a fab ad, if anything, if he's useful in any realm that way.
But, yeah, the other thing, sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
No, I was just saying, like, it's Matt Strom. Like, if you used Matt Strom at some point, just to try to make it through a week, I think that's where Crochet is going up. But Strom's kind of like the ideal,
like, that's a very nice line last year. I'll take that. If Crochet's gonna do that, I'll take that.
Yeah, no, I'm not opposed to the potential for Crochet to do this. I would say if you watch the whole Chris Getz interview, Chris Getz is quickly becoming the Chris Getz of general managers in the league. Like, I don't know what his instructions are for the White Sox. I don't know what he's trying to do. But holy cow, that team has gone in 2 years from being like on the cusp of not an elite team, but of like a credible, not just an AL Central playoff team, but a pretty credible team to this team could. This is a couple of trades and a couple of injuries away from being the worst team in a league that includes the Kansas City Royals, the Detroit Tigers. And that's not hyperbole. Like, you don't have to use too much imagination for this team to be a 100-loss team next right. year, and maybe worse than that. Like they are very close to being very, very, very bad, the White Sox.
Jake Berger must be counting his blessings every goddamn day. Cold, hotter weather and a much better outlook for his career. Let's move over to the Cardinals real quick. I want to hit this last item on the mining news. I read this in an Irish accent. Tommy Edman and Brendan Donovan. I don't know why. I read the article and I said that in my head. I'm like, why am I reading it like this? But it just came out like that. In general, too. So Tommy Edman is coming off off-season wrist surgery. Donovan had the internal brace. I know it's like a little bit of a warning to draft quote-unquote players who might be injured, but how do you guys feel about guys coming off of surgery? Do you consider them fully healed and like not an injured risk anymore?
I think with Donovan, like we knew it happened during the season and he had to get it. Edman seemed a little like,
yeah,
is he getting it? Is he not? It must have been pretty damn bad that it was like, oh, I've gone a month and nothing's like fixed on it. You know, it's like, oh, these kind of like these ones, they sneak it in. Those are the ones that worry me. Because it's like, oh, he's just trying to ramp up and, you know, go swing the bat and he can't now. And then they have to go get surgery and is he not going to be ready because he's wanting to swing a bat earlier? So Edman has me a little bit worried, but Donovan, not so much, just because it's like we knew what happened. They did. I mean, they fixed it during the season and hopefully he'll be ready to go when the spring training starts.
Yep, agree with that.
Cool. All right, let's slide right into some recent transactions. Mr. Teoscar Hernandez goes over to the Los Angeles Dodgers and improves that lineup even a little bit more. I just got my first DC share of Teoscar. Feel good about it. But I don't know. Do you guys think there's any risk that they play a crazy matchup game with him, you know, against righties who can really, he's terrible against sliders away. Okay. It's one little thing in his profile that he tends to chase.
So it's like 80% of all the other hitters.
I know, but that's what I've heard. Like, you know, I've seen that as the biggest excuse why he might lose PT, but you think they'll nitpick him out of that much PT? I think maybe defense late in the games, but volume wise, how much of a hit do you think he takes, Jeff, if he takes any? Before we get Jeff and Rob's answer on Teoscar Hernandez and we roll into the ADP values, we are going to ask you if that MLB hot stove has given you that draft itch. And if you're ready to start drafting, you can head on over to UnderdogFantasy.com right now. It's the easiest place to play fantasy baseball. Right now, they have an MLB contest called the Bullpen, which it's a best ball format. You can draft a team for the entire 2024 season in this best ball format. All you got to do is join, draft your team, that's it. No waivers, no trades, no in-season management. You draft 20 players, you get the best cumulative scores in your starting lineup. Three pitchers, three infielders, three outfielders, and one flex each week of the season. So getting started is simple. You go to UnderdogFantasy.com, you sign up with the promo code POLLHITTER, and Underdog doubles your initial deposit up to $100. The Underdog has $75,000 in total prizes. It's only $5 to enter, so what are you waiting for? Sign up right now with Underdog with a promo code POLLHITTER, and you get your first deposit doubled so you can draft with me in the bullpen today. Must be 18 and over, 19 over in Alabama, Nebraska, 21 over in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms may apply. If you're concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789. Here we go, back to the launch angle.
I think there'll be two hits, and it's all on playing time. One will be the Dodgers just seem to sit everyone like every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. That's just one, like it'll be some random Wednesday he's going to sit, and then it's just like for no reason. They're just going to rest the guys. The other one is I think he would have been better on some other teams. He would have been higher in the lineup. Right now it looks like he's going to be batting seventh with really no one behind him. So his runs, actually, the Fangraphs projections have him low, and I can understand that because he may not get hit in him that much. I think on some other teams where he was looking to go, he would have been batting third or fourth. So I think those are just kind of two hits where his overall playing time, they have him, I was looking at Fangraphs here, 140. That's probably about right for the number of games. And 600 plate appearances, yeah, you would kind of hope for more, but I don't think he's going to if he's batting that low in the lineup.
I would take the under on 600 plate appearances. I think the defense is a real problem when you don't have the DH open at all for him. He literally will not play a single plate appearances unless the decent DH that the Dodgers signed gets hurt. But if Ohtani stays healthy as a hitter this year, then Teoscar doesn't get into a single game there. And Teoscar, having watched him, is not a player who should play the outfield at all. So it's one of those things that sounds very black and white. But if he's coming out in the seventh inning in half the games that the Dodgers play, a third of the games, so loses, let's say, only 30 plate appearances out of that, and then I'd have to think this through, so I don't want to name a name just off the top of my head, but let's say there's one of the five Dodgers starting pitchers who is a fly ball heavy starting pitcher. So every third start of that guy, the Dodgers decide, you know what, we have enough offense in this game, so we're going to play our fourth outfielder there and give Teoscar. And that doesn't mean there's an injury even. Suddenly, it's really hard to get to 600 plate appearances when you're also, as Jeff said, not hitting third or fourth. So you put all of that together, I think he could easily be a 560 plate appearance guy. And when we talked about Teoscar 2-3 weeks ago, I was very high on Teoscar. I thought, like, at his old draft position, when nobody was really excited about Teoscar, I'm like, there's a lot of bounce back potential here. The flip side is his strikeout rate the last 3 years, and these are just facts, has gone from 25% to 28% to 31%. If the projections have him regressing back to 28.7%, call it 28%. But it's just as possible it goes 33% the next number. If his strikeout rate goes to 33%, the batting average gets into trouble. And old man skills like can come fast for some guys. So I think he's going to be very good still. But I'm just looking at – I just looked at the three online championship drafts that have taken place since the announcement, just because those are the drafts I know that happened after the announcement, whereas the DCs, you don't know if Teoscar was drafted before or after. His ADP in the three online championships since the signing was announced is 128, so ninth round pick. But the min was 94, so that's seventh round pick. Let's say he settles at eighth round in 15 team leagues. So there wasn't my brain is switching back to 15 team. Obviously for 12 team, which these drafts were, it's different. Let's say he ends up as a seventh round pick though. I think between the fact that Teoscar doesn't run very much anymore, the old man skills and the ceiling on his plate appearances, I'm not sure I can be in on Teoscar anymore. And I think that there's going to be a lot of people who are, I just want to peach the Dodgers lineup. And this is the cheapest place I could get a good piece of the Dodgers lineup. So we'll see. I could be wrong. Maybe if it's like ninth, 10th round in 12 team leagues, then I think he still is an interesting guy. I am being very Rob Silver here. I know I'm both contradicting myself and debating with myself at the same time. We'll have to see. But like, the shit you said, Rob, when we were talking about Teoscar, all of it was true. Every word of it was true. So the only thing that's changed is he's on the Dodgers. Yeah. That's a double-edged sword.
Right. I mean, the one thing I guess that would go against it would be like the Dodgers park itself has the highest home run factor for mm-hmm. righties in Statcast. So I guess if you want to parlay into that, okay, you know, if he's able to just slam a couple more home runs into the atmosphere, that would be good. He's pulling the ball in the air less and less in the last 3 years too, which can also be a little bit of a no-no in that park because, you know, left center is really good. But I wouldn't go reaching for him. I just think there's a little bit more opportunity. I just like the landing spot. Yeah, I think it was good in terms of
other than him going to Braves, where else would you love it? Like, of course, right, it's a great landing. Yeah. So, like, counting stats wise, it's tremendous.
Yeah, I could see him pounding in, especially if it's any type of reason why he would move up ahead of Muncy or anything. You know, he just been a ton of ribbies there. All right, let's move over to Shoto Imanaga, who signed with the Chicago Cubs. I believe that's official, right? It's kind of official. I don't know. I think I've always expressed my unwillingness to draft the imports because I just don't know how they're going to adapt. Seems to be some various opinions on the impact they'll have. Again, he got the transaction hype. He signed, and immediately in my draft, he just like his min pick just magically appeared, which is an interesting phenomenon. But Jeff, what's your thoughts on what he could do for the Cubs here?
I'm completely out. I had written earlier in this offseason the Asian player comps, like I ran them all for the various guys, and he's coming in as like I would call it like prime Miles Michaelis. That's I don't know, everyone's likes that one, but it's like the comps that comes over was Colby Lewis, Kikuchi. Senga like barely works his way in. Like that's like the best case, I think. But like the worst case is like Nick Martinez or people that have done similar numbers. So there's just nothing I have to get excited about right there. I mean, compared to Yamamoto, it's like Yamamoto's is like all the good ones, like Yu Darvish, you know, Tanaka, Otani, and it's just like these ones are just I'll bet on something I know more unless he's like free later in the draft.
I've seen some tweets though that Imanaga greater than Snell for a Cub fan, so they preferred Imanaga over Snell. Two times I younger. I don't know.
They've already been drinking too much. I don't know any other way to do it. Like I said, I'll take the comps over, see what compares, and it's like if it's good or if it's not. It's like I kind of created them just because I was tired of like the translations and not knowing even what the translations were using. So I'm not impressed. So maybe someone else can see something else. Maybe his ride on his four seam fastballs some great amount, and that's going to make him strike out 12 batters per nine. But I have my doubts.
Cubs fans have become amongst the most delusional fans I find on the social medias of late. God bless them all. The projections a lot like Steamer loves the guy. I don't have a Japanese comps system that I've built, but I know if you take smart guy posted on Twitter that ultimately the only two things that matter for starting pitchers are innings pitched and strikeout minus walk rate. If you take a strikeout minus walk rate for Steamer, it's basically identical to Zach Gallen's. That's the good one. Nestor Cortez, Yu Darvish, if you want to be racist and only compare him to other Japanese players. I'm not saying you're being racist, Jeff, just generally. From very, very good in Zach Gallen's case to pretty good in like a Nestor Cortez case. And I haven't seen what his ADP has done since his signing, but he was certainly in the sample size of one DC that I did. And when I was looking at the ADP, he was quite reasonable. Like it's not like his cost was atrocious. So we'll see where he settles. But I agree with Jeff. Like the major league equivalencies for these guys are not entirely reliable. So I'll be curious what, let's say, the bat projection for us, if it's very similar, if Cardi comes out with a different projection for him when he releases his projections.
Yeah, the last 11 DCs, he's gone 217. We're right behind Darvish at 215, as early as 197. And in my current DC, he went at 172. So nice big bump. Sorry, 192. Okay, so not much different. I thought it was a lot different.
Can I ask you, Rob, you do a lot of DCs. There's a very, very visible, I haven't done a study on this, so this is anecdotal. There's a very visible discount on these like early winter into the midwinter, I guess we are now, DCs for guys who haven't signed yet.
Yeah.
What's the psychology behind that?
I don't know.
I guess I understand if it's like Joey Votto. There's an X% chance Joey Votto won't get a team and won't have a job and therefore you need to discount a guy because you may be making a pick that like literally gets zero plate appearances out of him. Understand that. But for the guys who it's just a question of where, but we sort of know within range A to B, why is there such a noticeable discount for them? Like what is it?
I know. Like my best example this year is Carlos Santana, right? He's going to pick 430 and people might be nervous where he's signing. I don't think he's going to a team where he's not going to be the starter. I mean, the guy was useful every single week of the season last season. He's a switch hitter with no split. I'll take him. He's one of my most rostered players right now.
So he's an example where I could say there's a 5% chance he's in a platoon or split. So I can accept the fact that let's give him a 30 pick discount. But like Blake Snell is going to get a starting pitching job, yeah, and it's likely not to be with Colorado. So yeah, why? And I'm not saying Blake Snell has a discount, but like a player like that should have no discount to him. I accept that there are better parks, there are better situations, blah, blah, blah. But
I know. Sorry, for me, when you see Yuri Perez get drafted ahead of Blake Snell, a lot of times that is a discount for Blake Snell. Yeah. So I agree with you there.
You may not like Blake Snell because of the walk rate, and I can accept that. But you should evaluate the player. Like your evaluation of Blake Snell should be 98% today, the same today as it will be in March. If you're just off of Blake Snell because you don't want guys who walk them, it's your team. You can do whatever you want. I don't know that a team is going to change who Blake Snell is. Anyways, it's just a small.
I love it's that. It's weird to me. It is weird. And I think those later guys, there's a lot of chance to capitalize and draft champions with the Brandon Belts. A couple of years ago, it was my biggest. I remember Cesar Hernandez, right? Mm-hmm. It's like nobody thought he was going to get a starting job. I drafted him like in every DC I had late. Nobody wanted him and he had a good year. You know, it's just you can profit off those uncertainties. And as soon as they get signed to a job, you know, it's good. But
or Marcus Stroman, for example.
Yeah, it's going to be fun watching the Yankees this year. A lot of dancing. Let's go to Marcus Stroman to the Yankees.
Yeah, that was a segue. See, Rob,
segue.
That's how it works.
Segue.
That's what professional fantasy baseball podcasters do is said segues like that.
Marcus Stroman goes to the Yankees. I don't know if the Yankees are done signing pitchers, but with Luke Weaver, too, in tow, maybe they are done. But, Jeff, what's your thoughts on Stroman in the Bronx?
I think he's going to have a strikeout rate of 7.5 with an ERA just short of 4 like he has every damn year. And it's what he does.
Yeah,
I actually kind of like him in DC. You just plug him in, you know that's what he's going to do. You sit him in Colorado, you sit 95% of all pitchers in Colorado. Maybe not if you really need wins and strikeouts anymore, because that's pretty much a guarantee there. But he's done the same thing no matter where he's at. There's been like one exception, so... Like I said, he is who he is. It's no big surprise, and I don't expect anything different when he's there.
What's interesting to me about there's a lot of interesting things about Marcus Stroman. So two things. One, for a while he was a volume pitcher. He hasn't been a volume pitcher the last two seasons. So health does matter for him, depending on the league context you're picking him in. I had a bias about Marcus Stroman, the fantasy pitcher. Forget Marcus Stroman, the human being or the man. I obviously have other things to say about Marcus Stroman, but just from a fantasy perspective, he's had years where he has far surpassed his underlying metrics because he doesn't miss a ton of bats. He's always been a guy who the stuff, if all you knew about pitching was from Pitch Ninja and watching GIFs, you think Marcus Stroman must like lead the lead in swing and strike rate, and must be a 250 strikeout pitcher. He's never been that guy. He's a ground ball pitcher, so Yankee Stadium shouldn't impact him that much. We'll see what the Yankees infield defense, how it actually plays out. But what's interesting is for his entire career, his actual ERA and his FIP and his SIERA are basically the same thing. It hasn't gotten there in a linear fashion, but that's where they've sort of landed. So I agree with Jeff. Like, he is what he is. And if you need a strikeout pitcher, he's not your guy. If you need a guy who will have a solid ERA and some wins, he probably could be your guy pretty late in drafts.
100%. Yeah, I can't anything to that. He's just, like you said, he's a good maybe SP5 on your team, SP6 that you're just going to throw out there and just, you know, just help you get you to your innings total in Roto or steal your win in a head-to-head league or whatever. But I mean, if you try to follow his pitch mix stuff, it's impossible. It's just like it's like an EKG report. It just goes up and down for like everything. He changes every single game attack plan. Jordan Hicks just signed, goes to the San Francisco Giants, 4 years, $44 million to be a starter. It's going to be interesting when he shows up and he realizes that starters only go about three or four innings in San Francisco. But Jeff, what's your thoughts on Jordan Hicks? I mean, a lot of people are drafting him as that, like that speculative closer, like after all the, you know, the closers go, and they're like, yes, Jordan Hicks, he's got an ADP right now, 306 in the last 11 DCs. I wonder how everyone feels about him getting starter innings.
It is what it is. It's not going to last. I have zero faith that he's going to make it as a starter.
Yeah.
With that said, he's a good pitcher. He's in DCs, I think he's fine. Because you'll have other relievers that you could be able to run in. But when it comes to actual like draft season, he's probably one of the, I'd have to see who I was taking a chance on, but I don't think he'll be a closer. Like, I think you have to hold him and hope he gets the job. And then you might not even be able to use him in some weeks that, you know, you have a bad matchup and you want to throw him in because he's hurt. Like I said, in a regular draft, I just probably someone I'm going to stay away from. I mean, the numbers
is
are
a
good.
Regular draft meaning anything that's not a mock or
I would say, just a normal like fab league, any kind gotcha. Of fab league.
Yeah, no, I mean, like in mock drafts, I'm taking him in the third, fourth round. in real drafts,
just to experiment.
In real drafts, he's a pretty easy will not draft at all for me, and here's the reason why. So, I'm okay taking risks on guys who need to have one thing change or improve in order for it all to work out. So if the only problem with Jordan Hicks' starting pitcher was health, if he can stay healthy, then he has a chance to be a dynamic starting pitcher. Then I'd be like, well, you know, maybe it's only a 20% chance he stays healthy, but at cost X, I'm pulling the trigger. Before then, no chance. Jordan Hicks both needs to prove he can stay healthy as a starting pitcher, which is a big, big if for him. Second, he walked, like, let's not beat around the bush. He walks way too many guys to be a starting pitcher. He walks too many guys to be a closer, but at least closer, there have been successful examples of guys who have made this work. Like, he's Dylan Cease plus potentially in terms of the walk rate as a starting pitcher. So if you play in a league with whip as a category and he stayed healthy and went deep into games, none of which I believe will actually happen, he is easy to be to imagine being a guy who's a 1.3 plus whip guy. And as I think we were talking about last week, there are only so many guys who help your whip. If you start taking on guys who have the potential to destroy your whip in potentially, again, this is the best case scenario, lots of innings, like you need Strider and Hicks to start waiting it out, or like a Kirby or somebody elite. And that only gets you back to kind of an average whip in a hypothetical league where Hicks actually worked out as a starter. And finally, he's a two pitch starting pitcher. And I don't say that in a lazy type of way, because we all can think of tremendous starters who can make two pitches work, but he's not a natural starting pitcher. Last point. When he came into the league, so the Cardinals saw him as a minor league starting pitcher. Then he was 21 years old, and say his fastest, easiest, quickest way to the majors is bring that 100-mile-an-hour fastball into the bullpen. Let's just get him into the majors in the bullpen. The strikeout rate for the strikeout rate versus stuff is not automatic that if he were this hypothetical starting pitcher who could stay deep into games despite the walk rates, that he's an elite strikeout pitcher, despite how dynamic that fastball is. So that's like six things in the last 20 minutes since I saw the announcement on why I think this is not going to work out. And if it somehow did work out, I don't want it working out on my fantasy team.
All right. For everyone that's interested, you need to go to his Fangraphs page, go to his splits, take the career ones, go down to his starter, and just read that line and think that's the guy you're going to draft. with his 7.2 walks per nine. K minus walk percentage of 3% as a starter. Like, if that's what you're looking for, go ahead.
And but, I'd say in defense of him, he was better as a reliever than he was prior to him getting that opportunity to be a starter. So if you think that something has improved in Jordan Hicks from that guy, you might be saying, yeah, but Jeff, he's better now. I just don't think there's any reason to think that the "but he's better now" can carry over into a starting role. I think he has the potential to be a really dynamic setup guy for the Giants, who sometimes goes two innings in the back half of that bullpen. So it's not that I think he's a shit pitcher. I think he's a really good pitcher and a really talented pitcher. I just think it's a total... I think what happened was he really wants to be a starting pitcher, and I think the Giants had to tell him in order to get his name on a contract, because for whatever reason, the Giants just can't sign guys. We will give you a full opportunity in spring training to start. We will stretch you out in spring training. Sign with us. We're going to give you a shot. And I think what they're thinking is, this is not going to work. We're full of shit. We're not actually seeing him as a starting pitcher. This is what we had to say. And if there's a small chance he shows up at spring training and is suddenly this dynamic starting pitcher, great. Otherwise, we're going to try to build a bullpen here, and he's going to be a key part of the bullpen. But I don't think
he's not even that good of a reliever. I mean, no, he's got a 12.8 strikeout per nine. That's the same as Kyle Gibson as a starter.
Yeah.
No, he's Kyle Gibson in the freaking bullpen. Who cares?
What's weird to me, if the Giants, if I'm wrong and the Giants actually think he's going to be a starting pitcher, is it's not like there aren't still really good starting pitchers on the market right now. Like, it's not like they're in this corner where they had to get creative because there were no other arms left. 100%. There still are really good starting pitchers. So, like, anyways, that's my theory.
You're right. Point really, really just hammered it home. Like, if that's the way they thought they had to go, right? There's Snell is available. Montgomery's still out there. There's still options. And just to say this is the way. And I mean, the old bait and switch, man. That's hysterical.
put personality aside. Like, at least with Marcus Stroman, who was cheaper, you know what you're getting. In terms of a starting pitcher. And again, the Giants do need starting pitchers. It's not like the Giants don't actually need rotation help. So it's weird. Quite weird.
He found the plate a lot more with the Blue Jays. And, you know, when he went over to you guys, I mean, he definitely dropped his K rate about 10%, but I mean, he walked a lot less and he was pretty effective when he had to slip in for Romano. You know, they definitely just, I think it was like, hey, just throw your sinker and nothing else. Pretty much what he did. And you know, a whole bunch of ground balls, which, you know, I guess he could do in the pen, but he's not taking a job from Doval. So I think a lot of those people who hammered him home as a speculative closer at pick 350. I mean, you know, when the draft started, I got him once at like 450 in early DC. I'm like, okay, maybe this is a good spec, you know, save guy here. But once he started getting up to the 350s, 300, I said, no, thank you. And I think that's
the only thing I'd say. The only caution I'd say, and this is maybe overthinking it, but we're in January, so maybe this is the time to still overthink it.
Yeah.
The Giants have shown in the past with Duvall that they're not opposed to having him be a high leverage guy as opposed to a strict closer. And by that, I mean, if the 2-3-4 hitter the Dodgers 2-3-4 hitter are coming up in the eighth inning, we might pull Duvall into the eighth inning. To face the best part of a lineup as opposed to saving him for the ninth inning. And it's much easier to do that if you also have a Hicks who can come in and still finish a game. And I don't think he loses the job, but that can be 8 to 10 saves a year that he loses. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I don't think for that franchise, that's crazy for that to happen.
It's not crazy. I think I'd almost like rather rely on the steady Roger brothers in some way, because again, they're not, you know, wild or ineffective. Like, you know, they get the job done. They're not sexy, but and Doval did have a bad ending to a season. You know, he didn't do that great in the second half. So I mean, there's something to that for sure. All right, let's last transaction here. Michael Bush is freed. Twitter explodes. He's freed. He's freed. He goes to the Cubs. And is he really freed? And is there a free on Craig Council's team? Is there such a thing? the lefties.
I'm not interested at all. I know he puts up some great numbers, but it's in the PCL as like a 25-year-old over like the last two seasons. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at the projections. His batting average not looking good. I've run some comps on him, and he's kind of coming in as like a Luke Voit type of talent. I don't know. There could be some power here, but I think that there's some major issues. He has some splits, but the problem is it's tough to tell with the PCL. Like they're kind of large, but since both of his numbers, he's hit really good, that the bottom one looks good. I don't know if it's actually going to become an issue. I would consider coming in as like a backup. Like I don't know if he's going to be starting or if they'll make some other move. I think this was like, we're kind of getting this guy for free, and if things work out, you know, we can have him here, but he's not someone I'm going to target.
So, Rob, how did you read Jameis Anderson's comment on Bush in the Discord when this transaction? Oh,
you know, and he said it was the opposite of when an injured pitcher.
How did you read that comment? I read it as he's off of Bush. He hopes that there's a lot of hype now, and because he has no interest in
That's exactly how I read it. Did he mean something different?
No, I just didn't want to put words. I certainly, of all the people in the world, I want to not put words into their mouth incorrectly. I have way too much respect for James's his whole fantasy game, but especially when it comes to prospects. Yeah. Because
he said he hopes the ADP keeps climbing. So I'm climbing. Assuming,
I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically it. I'm happy this happened because the hype is going to get high because I have no interest. If I'm incorrect, then I apologize. It's 100% me misreading it, James, because that's certainly what the projections show. This is not a guy you should, even if he gets 650 plate appearances hitting third for the Cubs, this is a guy who is mediocre at best.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. And like Jeff mentioned, he did what he should have done at his age in an excellent environment to hit in. He's definitely got some holes in the swing. And I don't think that Craig Counsell's lineups will ever feature him in a starring role every day. There's still Wisdom, there's still Morel who might play some first, who knows. They can even go out and get another first baseman and just make and then trade Morel, and then Bush becomes this, you know, utility role guy. I don't think he's in for a starring role at all, so that's why I'm completely off him. Again, he's going to be a transaction hype beast in draft champions, and even at, you know, I think 500 right now, you know, that's going to go up to the 400s, and I'm not going to be interested there either. All right, let's go to some.
I will just talk. I just say one more thing? One more thing?
Yeah, 100%. Could say five more things.
I probably will. It only reaffirms, you just tweak this for me. It reaffirms what I think about Morel, and I think I said it when we talked about him earlier, which is the Cubs are yelling, "We don't believe in Chris Morel," and without saying that. And yet all their actions show they don't believe in Chris Morel. So that's the only thing I'd say.
I like it. I 100% like it. All right. So we left off here with some catchers last episode with Jonah Heim. We're going to start off with Mr. Masataka Yoshida on the Boston Red Sox, pick 170. That's a very loud alarm that just went off. Jeff, what do you think about Yoshida here going a pick 170 last 11 drafts as early as 151?
I think he's a great build guy if you're hurting for batting average, because he won't kill you in stolen bases, home runs. It's not like, I'm just getting this guy for this one reason and nothing else. I think he kind of keeps your build going. He's not going to help you in the other two, but they're not zeros. So I could see myself drafting him if that's what I need. Like I said, I think he's just a straight build player, and he's going to get a ton of bats in Boston.
Yeah, I since our discussion last podcast about you being targeting like position scarcity, and then Major wrote a really good column around the ratios over at Fade the Noise. I don't know if people saw it.
Fantastic.
But it was really, really well done and well researched.
What a welcome addition into the content world.
There are not a lot of people who are both great players and great fantasy writers at the same time. And he's shown he can do both very, very good. So I've started just playing around with my SGPs and looking at various things. And what's interesting about Yoshida is it's one thing to see he has a good projected batting average and has those good skills. But when you see the combination of the batting average and then the plate appearances, he comes out on just a pure steamer basis as the 10th most valuable batting average. But that's at a really low 557 plate appearance projection. If you bump it up, and I'm not saying that Fangraphs is wrong or that I would draft on a higher plate appearance basis, but if you start pushing it up, it becomes easily a top 10. And it's, as Jeff said, not in an Arias type way where it's like I'm buying myself an empty batting average. You don't have to like squint too hard to see 20 home runs coming from him as well. So I think he's a really interesting fantasy player this year.
He started 3 of the last 10 games versus lefties to end the season. You think that's something that's going to continue?
It could. They have guys. So yeah.
That's the one thing that's worrying me, I guess, a little bit is how much will he play?
You know? The only thing I'd say is it's a double-edged sword. So that obviously you want your guys playing. If you're buying guys though for batting average and they're sitting against guys they're not going to do very well against, that does help protect their batting average. So there is a bit of a double-edged sword of like the next 100 plate appearances against lefties. If he truly can't hit lefties very well, maybe really crappy plate appearances that are just driving down the one thing that's largely driving his value. I don't know that, but that's one argument.
He didn't do that bad. I mean, he had like a 740 OPS first them. I don't know why they did that. You know, and Duran was out too. It's not like they had him in the lineup as well, you know. So I maybe it was getting Abreu a shot and Rafaela, and maybe they were just trying to see what they had at the end of the season and that was what, you know, he's going in a spot too, like right now though. I just see a lot of other players I like a lot better than him, as we discussed, kind of like maybe where you come back into pitching with your Pivetta's and your Rodon, or this is where you may catch that last catcher that's available out of that big group that we discussed. So that's mostly why I just really haven't put my finger on him. That didn't come out right. I don't want to put my finger on him, but that's why I haven't drafted him.
Hey, look, if you're watching the Justin Mason bathing suit pictures and feel you need to put your finger on him, that's again your call.
Right, day on the Red Sox here. Jaron Duran, pick 173, as early as 156, as late as 186. Jeff, what's your thoughts on Jaron Duran?
I like what you're possibly going to get out of him. He's one of the later ones that I think there's a good chance you have a chance at like 30 plus stolen bases this late without being, again, not a drag in batting average. Like he'll give you almost kind of a decent one. If looking at his projections will help you with some home runs. He got platoon. He wasn't platooned to start the season. He was platooned until he got hurt for about the middle third. And he didn't really show a split last year, but over his career, he's shown a kind of a major one. So I don't know how the playing time is going to work out. I bet they try to give him a full-time run again, see what he can do. And if he struggles against him last year, like I said, I don't know why they moved him to the platoon based on what he was doing for the year, but if you need stolen bases at this point, a chance of like 30 without killing you every other place, he's someone I would. I like I said again, it's all part of the build, but this is the one thing that you can do with outfielders. You can get average guys or you can get stolen base guys, and I'm sure we'll talk about someone that hits for power if we have time.
Yeah, like if you convince yourself that Duran is going to hit leadoff for 150 games for Boston Red Sox this year, then this has the potential to be a ridiculously good buy. I'm not sure I'm convinced that Duran is going to hit leadoff or play 150 games for the Red Sox, but he might. I wish, this is like saying I wish Margot Robbie was sitting next to me. I wish he was a better defensive center fielder. I wish he was an elite, if he was an elite glove and the glove was going to keep him in the lineup, no matter what he hit against lefties, that would be, give me more comfort that the path towards like play every single day was there. The flip side, or the final point on Duran is, even if he doesn't play every day and does platoon a fair bit, he's going to give you enough speed power combo that if you're stacking those guys on top of each other, like he's a pretty good addition to your team. Like on a per game basis, he's very, very good.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I know the Red Sox had a lot of stuff going on in that second half of the season and then in September, but when he left the lineup, the lineup just wasn't the same. I don't know. I love the fact too that in only 362 plate appearances, he only hit 8 homers, but he had 34 doubles. I think he was second in the league before he got hurt. I don't know, 828 OPS and stings the ball, 112 max EV. I think at this point, even if he does get about 80 to 100 games leading off, I think 15-25, 15-30 might be one of the best picks in the draft at this point of the draft. Like Jeff said, batting average that won't hurt you, it's really solid.
If you told me next year Duran was going as a 4th-round pick, I wouldn't be totally shocked.
Yep.
It wouldn't shock me.
100%. Absolutely agree. So it just depends on your risk tolerance or your stance. And be like, yes, you know, I'm just going to go with it. And if he doesn't get the full time, it is what it is. It's just a Red Sox podcast right here. Jason DuPont's going to be in heaven. What Nick Pivetta is next on the list here. Also with a ADP about 174. Jeff, what's your thoughts on Mr. Nicky P?
I swear to God, it's people in the draft. Like I need to take a picture. I'm behind, and Nick Pivetta is my answer. And it's like Nick Pivetta is not the answer. Like you've probably screwed up at this point. If Nick Pivetta is your answer, your number three guy, you know, that is going to fill in your team here because you've gotten two closers or whatever. But I just think that you can just wait and try to get someone a little bit better. With Pivetta, Rob brought it up earlier. Is he had that big difference between starting and relieving, and it's definitely showing up in his stats. Don't think that like, oh, if he's starting, those numbers you see there are his starting ones. Like they're quite a bit, they're reasonable this last year, but they were a lot worse, and he wasn't going until right at the end, late in the games. It was kind of we might go 5 innings. He was getting a lot of starts there that counted, and you know, he's getting the stats only going 4 innings or so. So I think this is the chance to take some, you know, to take a chance on him, but it's also one where it's like, just wait and take a chance on someone else and grab one of these hitters that are actually like legitimate here.
I think it's a little bit different. What's going on, it's the fetishization of second half and late splits. And people running like, how did they do in September? How did they do after the All-Star break? And Nick Pivetta in the back half of the season was outstanding. Like he was one of the best pitchers in baseball at the back half of the season. So you'll see bloom boards, you'll see all those things, and they're fun. But if they were so predictive, and I tweeted about this because it's not just a Nick Pivetta thing, people are obsessed about what guys did at the back half of the season, and sometimes for very good reasons. Sometimes it's something changed that was dramatic. Sometimes it's like, well, the manager has given us a clue of how they're going to be used next season. So I'm not saying it's useless, but if they were so predictive, September statistics or second half statistics, don't you think the people who like run all the tests to put together projections would just overweigh September stats or overweigh second half stats? Like they're trying to be as predictive as they possibly can. So the default 19 times out of 20 should be projections. It should not be, but his September stats from last year were A, B, and C, or even his second half stats. I tweeted out an article that Jeff wrote like it wasn't 20 years ago, but a long time ago, showing how for almost everything, second half stats are not useless, but no more predictive than you would think they would be. It's just a small sample size that you're picking. So I am willing to be open that Nick Pivetta has finally found the like nirvana land of success that people thought he was going to find in 2017 and 2018 and 2019 and 2020 and 2021 and 2022. Nick Pivetta has been like Lucy with the football for people over and over and over again. And maybe this is the time that Nick Pivetta has finally put it all together and is going to be a really good starting pitcher because of how good he was in the second half. But I think he is more likely to be the guy who Steamer sees him, which is a fine but not very good starting pitcher.
So let's take out the second half then. For any pitcher who's pitched over 100 innings last year, he was eighth in K-minus walk percentage. So that's not second half split. That's not being picky. That's looking at the whole picture. Is that not?
As a starter or as a reliever?
Yeah.
That's total. As a starter, he's 15th. As a starter with over 75 innings pitched, he's 15th. That's nothing? I'm just saying. I'm playing devil's advocate. That's behind Strider, Scooble, Glasnow, Ryan, Gausman, Pablo Lopez, Eflin, Peralta, Sale, Wheeler, Cole, Otani, Hunter Green, Scherzer, Nick Pivetta.
It's not nothing. I'm telling you what Steamer sees is a projected 16% strikeout rate. He's Andrew Abbott. He's Gavin Williams. He's like, and some good pitchers. And he's Jose Berrios. And he's like, it's possible that he's that guy and that he's on the cusp of being a really, really good starting pitcher. Yeah. I just don't think you're getting him very cheap here either. Like you're paying a price for that. What he did last year, start slicing and dicing how you want, is who he's going to be next year. It's very possible that's true. I mean, maybe he is that guy. And I'm sure people will say his stuff plot. Like you can find arguments to support Nick Pivetta taking a step forward to, if not being an SP1, but being a very, very good starting pitcher. Like what you said, Rob, is a fact. Like you're not making shit up. But there are just a lot of
I get it. He projected for the 30th most strikeouts for a pitcher. Yeah.
And I think that's reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, and I also don't think, and obviously this isn't always sustainable or, you know, just predictive in the next season, but he made legit changes to his repertoire. He threw harder as well. So yeah.
Who was the pitch coordinator who was working with
him? Oh, he's gone.
This, Rob. Do you think the loss of his pitch coordinator is going to have a negative impact on him this season?
He's getting another one. He's getting a better one. Jeez.
So you think you should be drafting with
Pablo Lopez area.
So you think his new pitch coordinator could be an argument for a step forward?
I better start mining this information.
Sonny Gray's on the Cardinals, Jeff. All right, one more reason
Jeff did not include that on mining the news. I don't know. What am I supposed to do? That's the only place I get my news is mining the news. If he doesn't flag it for me, I assume it's not important to know.
Rob, you got time for one more?
I can do one more.
One more, so we get a non-Red Sox in here. But Mr. Vinny Pascantino is next on the list, going at pick 175 in Draft Champions. Last 11 draft. Jeff, what do you think about Mr. Vinny P?
I think this is one that you just have to take the projections and hope for the best. And if you want to talk yourself into making the projections better, I'm not going to blame you. If you want to talk yourself into the projections and say he's hurt and you should never draft hurt players and that they're get him out of your lineups, then he's that player. But I think he's kind of a big wild card. I'm not sold on his labrum surgery. I'm kind of worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone else doesn't think so, then I don't blame him. Like I said, it's just a huge wild card right now. Saw him in person. He looks fine. He was at the winter meetings there. Did the Royals draft pick. He was on TV. He was kind of showing up all there, but it's such a, I don't know, a tough pick that if you need a home run or something, I guess he's the person to go with.
He is one of those guys who is really, really going to move, I think, in spring training if he shows up and is hitting well, slamming looking ball. Healthy, slamming the ball. So yeah. I think, and obviously if he shows up and he's going to open the year on the IL or whatever, and I'm not saying that's the case right now, but if he's not healthy, like anybody, he goes down. But it is 12 short months ago, people were so friggin' excited about Vinny P. Yeah. And there was almost an attitude, and I'm not saying it's wrong because he got hurt and wasn't great when he was healthy. People last year were like, it doesn't matter how expensive Vinny P is. I'm drafting Vinny P. I need Vinny P on my, like, he was one of those guys. And I don't know that anything has really changed about who the player is if he's healthy. So if you were a guy who was like, I must have Vinny P, he is the next big thing a year ago, you should really like him at this cost.
I think so too. And I what would you think that he would move up to if he's just really showing that he's hammering the ball?
What was his main ADP last year? You have it there?
I don't off the top of my head, but I want to say it was 90, 100, right?
Yeah.
What if he moves up to like where Josh Naylor is at 130? You think that's reasonable if he's really kind of hammering the ball, or even?
Yeah, I mean, I really like Josh Naylor. Yeah, so this is not a comment on Josh Naylor, but if he's going there, it's not that it's unreasonable. I think I'll probably like somebody more, but that's where I think he ends up, 130 to 150, if he's healthy.
I really love his overall profile, that the fact that he does not strike out and he walks and he's just a really professional hitter. Like Jeff mentioned, I don't know if you really want to talk about how much the homer output is there. Like, he had 19 home runs in 558 plate appearances. Can he do the projected 24? Possibly, right? But if he hit the nice 270 average and 20 home runs, 80 runs, 80 ribbies, isn't that Josh Bell? Right? Yeah. So, like, that's the thing with him. Like, he can be better, yes, and we dream of him being better, and he probably will be at some point. But this year, again, he just might be just as close to Josh Bell as he will to anyone in that top, 100. So, I guess that's my thoughts on him. It's, sorry, Italian guy. I am rooting for you, though, but I'm not drafting you yet this year.
So you're fully out on him?
Not fully out. I mean, it just hasn't got to me where, like, I just look at my sheet, I look at the numbers, and I'm like, if I need a first baseman at that point, I'm usually going Paredes, who's sliding, by the way. I don't know if you guys saw that in my notes, but Paredes is just slipping, sliding down. I mean, no respect for this guy. Every time that we do a pod, he just drops 10 more spots in ADP. Now 185. So I'll Paredes before Vinny P.
Why is Paredes slipping?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know, because Junior Carbonero is hitting home runs in Dominican leagues, and just people think, I don't know. I'm just making something up here. I have no reason why he's slipping down from about 2 months ago, 165, to now 185. So pretty interesting. But yeah, I'm not completely out on Vinny P. I just said, like, I'll go to Paredes first, or I'll have a first baseman earlier, or sometimes there'll just be a need that I'll go with outfield or pitching, and then I get, like I said, I'll get a Josh Bell or Brandon Drury or Justin Turner for first base, or Jose Abreu. You know, I have no problem waiting 100 picks and getting those guys, you know, which I think is definitely available.
Can I ask one last, and I was the guy who said I have to run, but I still have 5 more minutes to ask.
Yeah, go ahead.
So when it's a DC strategy question to both of you, but I know Rob does, is probably on his 47th DC already of the year. So when I did my DC, just the way, I didn't go in with a strategy, I didn't go with a plan. The way it worked out, I was probably in round 15 to 18, and I still didn't have a single middle infielder. But the question is middle infielders or corner infielders, or I only have one outfielder. Do you think the nature of DCs, but I ended up taking like 7 middle infielders, including my 3 starters, and like, are any of them good? No, but like, I have guys. So it's not like, oh my God, I need these 6 guys to find playing time. Playing time is not the concern. They're just, none of them are good. Do you think that is a screw up of a DC, or it doesn't really matter? The stats are stats. And if that's how the draft board played out, it's fine. Like, do you really want to have a first baseman, a third baseman, a second baseman, a shortstop, 3 or 4 outfielders pretty early, so you have kind of a base at every position, if that makes sense?
No, it does make sense. I don't think it's necessary. There's some drafts where I have 9 pitchers before I have, 12 batters. You know, it's just the way it lays out sometimes. But I don't think it's, and I'm a kind of guy who got kind of zags on the outfield rush because I feel confident in my late outfield spec. So I kind of like wait for that. But shortstop, I got to admit, though, like there's shortstop is a cliff unless you believe in a Tim Anderson, Ahmed Rosario, like range of getting them as your backups or starters. It's tough if you want to live that life. But and I think that's why what's driven me to really kind of focus on a Lindor in the second round or, Bobby Witt over J-Rod or Carroll because it gets dangerous down there. And I kind of want to try to have like a Zach Neto as my backup or my middle infield before I get, further. That's just my preference. It's just what I've noticed in drafting that middle infield, that shortstop especially gets really dangerous late. So I want to get it early. I'd prefer that over the outfield, but I don't think it matters. Stats are stats.
Yeah, the one thing I will say in any draft, I don't think this is in a DC, but I think it kind of happens because it's just no longer, is if people see I have this third, any other position and like shortstop, and they have the same stats, people will swear to God, they'll take the shortstop over the other ones. I think people are like, oh, I got to get my middle infield filled. I've even heard that on podcasts. This is what I'm going to do. So I always thought like the shortstops just get pushed up like a tiny bit just because if whenever players are equal, they're going to go for the middle infielders. So that's like whenever it gets to me, it's like, oh, this short, the next available player is not a shortstop. I'm not going to bump one up and I'll just take, Jordan Alvarez instead of Corey Seager type of thing. And it's like, oh, you took Corey Seager. Like, all right, that's fine. I'll just take Jordan Alvarez and kind of deal with my shortstop later. But like you said, you have to have the Nettos or you have to have someone later. Like you're going to have a weakness in a 15 team league. Like it's just no way around it.
Yeah. And I guess like just early on doing the early DCs or just, as I'm drafting DCs and sometimes you just get into around 40, 45 and as unsexy as they are, like guys like Randall Grichuk, who, can still get a job and provide something. There's options there to almost like play them as streamers as in a fab league and having them on your bench. But if you try to do that with shortstop, it's just like you got to go to Miguel Rojas, and there's just options there late, I think, in outfield, which makes me want to get my middle infielders early and kind of have that depth early at middle infield.
So that was one observation of having now done exactly one draft is, and this is from memory. So memory, especially at a certain age, is is a dangerous thing to make observations on. I was surprised how late in the draft when I used to do DCs from like round 35 on, it's like these are hopes and prayers and I've barely ever heard of these guys. Jokes aside, the odds of them ever getting any plate appearances were very low, whereas this year in round 50 there were still guys who I'm like, they may not be very good, but I was shocked how many players there are available. They may not be at the position I need, but there were still guys like Harold Ramirez, DH only, but like, yeah. Harold Ramirez is one trade away from Tampa Bay from having a full-time starting job. That is not go draft Harold Ramirez at all. Let me keep going.
No, but he's also like a weekend, like three lefties or two lefties, yeah. Even. He's a good play still.
I got Elvis Andrews in the 46th round. I don't know if Elvis Andrews is going to sign somewhere where he plays every day. Probably not. But is there a 40% chance that Elvis Andrews signs somewhere, plays every day, and we're, again, 12 months away from Elvis Andrews not being great, but being a totally usable guy in a 15-team league? This is not go draft Elvis Andrews. That's the 46th round, though. I was surprised by guys like that being available as late as they were, because that's not how I remember DCs. I don't know if it's the second DH that has changed playing time, or if people are taking more risks on rookies.
Yes. I think that's part of the variable, but I think that's the biggest variable out there is that rookie pitchers. Everyone wants the next Bryce Miller in round 40. So all that's getting pumped up, you know, and I think all those guys are trickling down and being available 100%.
You should study that. Compare those two in the other process there. Right?
Yeah, no, I've just added that to the list, Jeff. It's a long list of the research projects that me and my team are doing for the other process for next year. But I'm going to assign that to one of the interns to work on that.
All right, awesome. Thanks for hanging out again, guys. Everyone, for Jeff Zimmerman, Rob Silver, and Rob DiPietro. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Launch Angle Podcast.